This guy from L.A., Barry Egan, he's calling on the other line. He's saying all this stuff. He wants to talk to a supervisor or whatever.
What'd you say?
Nothing.
I put him through.
No, this is bad. Something
shut
must
up.
Have happened.
Will you shut up?
Okay, sexy. I'm going to connect you with my supervisor now.
You're in trouble, honey.
Who's this?
Hello, sir. My name's Barry Egan. I called your service the other night.
Shut the fuck up.
Oh, what's that?
I said calm down and shut the fuck up. What's the problem?
The problem is, if you give me a chance to explain, one of your employees, that girl who I was just speaking with, has been threatening me, and four blonde gentlemen just attacked me and smashed my car and hurt my girl.
All right, go fuck yourself. That shit has nothing to do with me. All right, I run a legitimate business here.
Listen to me. What's your name, sir? Answer me!
What's your name, asshole?
I'm Barry Egan!
How do I know? You can be anybody,
you're a bad person. You have no right taking people's confidence in your service. You understand me, sir?
You're sick.
No. Shut up! Shut the fuck up!
You have no right to take people's
confidence. Shut up! Will you? Shut up! Shut up! Shut! Shut up! Shut up! Now! Are you threatening me, Dick?
Why don't you... You go fuck yourself!
Oi. Fuck! Did you just say, go fuck myself?
Yes, I did.
That wasn't good! You're dead!
Andrew.
This is Damien.
And this is Douglas.
And the Seahawks won. Someone won.
Yes, they did.
Chelsea
the Broncos?
Won.
Chelsea won.
Alright, no, seriously.
The Seahawks won.
The Seahawks did win.
The Seahawks crucified the Broncos.
Something to like
yeah.
7 or something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't get to watch the game. I wanted to watch it.
No, you didn't. No one wanted to watch the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl was being shown on every single station. So don't give me that. No, you didn't want to watch it.
So who did you have in the Super Bowl? Were you a Broncos guy?
I had Messi. He scored a penalty. And he lost.
So,
I tried a long time ago and decided that me and American football was... Yeah,
it's
going to work.
No, I like NFL. I just don't follow it anymore.
So you don't like it?
No, let me tell you what it is. It's such a big investment of time, right? Especially when you want to follow other sports that play around the same time. So, NFL and EPL, which I've decided is my investment, play at about the same time, right?
No, they don't.
Yes, they do. They play on a Sunday. But if I was... to
EPL
watch.
Is done by 1 p.m.
NFL
will start till like.
But if I were to actually watch NFL and EPL together,
you would die.
I would die because, as Andrew says, right? Let's say I decide I want to just generally watch all the matches, which is what I used to do. I used to watch a lot of the NFL matches, and let's say I wanted to do the same thing for EPL, which I don't do right now. Mm-hmm. But let's say I wanted to, right?
I watch everything except the football
no,
games.
No, you have essentially the first half of Saturday is gone. Right? So from say 6 o'clock in the morning to about 12 o'clock in the afternoon is done on
right,
a Saturday.
A solid block
right?
of football.
Exactly. And then okay, you have the Saturday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, the
and
same.
And don't worry, halfway through the NFL season, Saturday afternoon.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I haven't even started to talk about that, but sure. You know, exactly. Then now on a Sunday, the same time period for EPL. Then NFL starts at about 12 and ends at about 12.
Right.
Then you have Monday Night Football, which starts about 8, ends at about 12. Then you have what has now become a thing. Usually, it used to just be Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Now every Thursday
is football
again. Mm-hmm. So it's essentially an investment of about 50% of your, or probably 75% of your non-work week. Into just sitting down, getting fat, and watching the flashing lights go.
It is the reason,
guys, it's hard.
Who watch like all the American sports, baseball, basketball, and NFL. And I don't understand how they live lives.
Like, except basketball and baseball worry me the most because those are like 100 game seasons. But,
basketball is 82. And baseball
is like the worst.
100 and something.
Yeah.
And then NFL is just on, like, the whole of your winter season is just on lockdown.
But at least with NFL, it's like 3 months and it's just the weekend, relatively. Right?
Yeah, but there's such a big time investment. And then as soon as NFL is done, baseball season starts up. And then all throughout that is basketball time.
Yeah. And please remember, EPL is going strong every day. Well, not every day, but every weekend except for one month in the year. No, not even summer. 1 month. Between about, I think it's...
It's like May, and that's the end.
And then August starts.
And that's when World Cup is.
This year. This year is going to be even worse because you have World Cup.
The South American Cup, Euro, and African nations. Well, Africa is generally in January.
I don't watch it.
Those are generally what happens in the summers as
Africans
we move down.
Don't watch it.
Hey, I don't know what you're talking about. Drogba watched it.
So guess what, guys? This is now the Unnamed Sports Podcast.
Yeah, I did it. Hey guys, Formula One starts in March.
I'm sorry. I tried. My problem is I'm a bad waker upper. Right?
Oh, no,
that's what you have to do.
That is why I watch all of them. I watch now all sports the way I watch TV.
Which is just afterwards. Yeah.
When that shit is over, I will catch up.
And when you can get it in HD.
Not even Arsenal matches?
I don't watch Arsenal. In fact, most football now is in highlight form. Mm-hmm. I just watch. There's a match of the day, and then there is BT Sport that does the Euro roundup, and that's pretty much it. Like, each individual league gets their
hour
and
a half. When was the last time you decided to sit down and watch a match live?
Not when I'm at work and bored, I guess. I just put on a match.
I mean live, not...
Oh, live? Not... It. I can't watch live matches in Jamaica. They're not in HD.
Ugly.
What are you talking about?
No, it's
not
so
even
true.
As a joke anymore.
It's so true.
If I'm at someone's house where I'm not given the choice, then fine. But once I have the option, why would I watch it in standard? I don't even, like, I can stream the Formula One races in the middle of the night. And if I'm bored enough, I will do that. But most of the time, I'm like, I will wait the 6 to 8 hours until this is HD and then I will watch this race because I don't want to watch it like this.
Okay.
It looks so much, like, it's so better.
I agree with you, but I think, like, we've had this conversation before, discussing sports as the one thing that I want to experience
there's
live.
There's, like, people in the States and in Europe that watches sports, like, pretty all the time.
I used to, like, whenever I'm watching football, I always like the moments where they're doing this thing where live on screen while the sport is going on, they highlight people and they have, like, the name over them. And I always think to myself, Damien's dream has finally come true.
No! Damien's dream is being ruined by technology. Why are you showing me there? What? Fuck you, FIFA. This is your doing. You're too goddamn popular.
I know. That's why. I love it.
Players' name above their heads. I've been watching football for years.
In real time.
Like, soon enough, it'll be in this match. In the stadium. Mm-hmm. It'll just have, like a holograph thing go over.
Before the match start, they're just laying down holograph. Just names and shit. And, like, power meter and tiredness gauges. Fuck!
A skill tree comes up.
He looks tired. Every time we make a pass, you see the pass completion stat in the corner.
This is amazing. We've gone 15 minutes on sports. But moving on. Running away from the
moving on to
sports podcast.
Anybody that is still listening to this now is a true fan.
This week, Damien asked us to talk about
something
film.
Completely related to sports.
Something completely related to sports.
In no way, shape, or form.
Run and jump. Damien, why don't you tell
me? Well,
yeah, the name. Ah, they were swimming.
Ted, you're a psychologist.
You're a psychologist.
He's a brain doctor.
Thank you, Noreen.
So you've done this before?
I don't normally do case studies, but Mr. Case's recovery was very rare.
Look,
spoon.
Hand.
It's a span.
It's for petting the animals.
I'm sure that Dr. Sue would explain the prognosis. Connor.
Where do you run in swimming? Where?
No, there was swim. I said there was swim.
Oh, okay.
So I saw a movie with Will Forte and I went, all right, I'll watch this. Mm-hmm. I like him. He comes in funny stuff. And then it was only after picking the movie to have you two watch it that I read what the movie was about. I went, oh no. And I made a, yeah. I made a mistake. Will Forte is not doing what he's known for. He is being dramatic. And I put that in air quotes. Because what he's doing is moping around for the entire movie. Him and everybody else in the movie. With the exception of the lead actress, which is the only redeeming part of the movie. I think she is terrific. She plays a wife who is bringing home her husband after he's had a stroke. He came out of a vegetated state. He was rehabilitated, but he's lost a lot of his brain functions. And there's a strong chance that he might not get it back. Will Forte plays a researcher who is there to document his process. And so he comes to live with them. And the movie is just essentially, from the wife's point of view, all of the things in the house, between the interactions between her and her now greatly reduced husband, and her children, and how her children deal with the husband, and how her friends are dealing with her situation, and how her parents are dealing with the entire situation. And the movie, at some point, you can see where they wanted it to be heartwarming. They put a lot of tragic, again in quotation, tragic things in there so that you'd feel even worse for this already terrible situation. There is deaths in the family. They have a child that happens to be going through puberty, but he is fond of other men, and so of course that is a problem. And it feels like they're trying too hard with the script to make you feel for these people. But you already have from the start. Like, they didn't need all of that. It felt superfluous. But the entire time, much like how Douglas felt about Blue Jasmine, you just watch this lady on screen 80 to 90% of the time. And she just takes a whole of the movie. And you go with her. And if you don't have made that connection, then you'll absolutely hate this movie, and I wouldn't blame you. But I'd never seen her act, and it was impressive to watch her, to watch great actresses do what they do. I feel about this movie the same way I feel about Blue Jasmine, which I finally saw. And the lead actresses take the movie away with them. I didn't love either of the movies. I enjoyed watching the actresses act. But the story that is wrapped around these actresses are poor. They're poor stories. And that's about it. Like, all the other things are there. The direction is terrific. I actually really like the music in this movie. I think they pick a lot of choice songs for certain areas. And but that's, like, there's nothing special about this movie. And if you are a Will Forte fan like I am, you should avoid this movie because he does nothing in the movie. What? Andrew's being very childish right now. Because I said Blue Jasmine is okay. I'm sorry that, like, she's incredibly in the movie. Kate, she's incredible. But the rest of the movie is not it's not great.
This is where I'm taking it.
That's fine. All right, Blue Jasmine is a little better than this movie, since that is what you are.
I'll take it. Fine.
If I had to pick between the two movies, I'd take the one with, in my opinion, the superior actress. All right, feel better.
I'll live for that.
All right, fine.
Why, Damien? Why did you make me watch this movie? Well, first off, clearly last year was the year that Will Forte decided he wants people to know.
Thanks. Is that your alarm to tell you that we're doing a podcast?
It is my alarm to tell Andrew to download the Memory Palace. It is a podcast, and...
All right, it's okay. I'll add it, and we'll talk about that.
I don't like pimping other people's podcasts.
So clearly it's like, a Sherlock Holmes fan.
It is this on Radio Lab. Like, okay. Every other podcast can... Like, find a cliff and chop straight up. Like, they're garbage. Straight up garbage. Including us.
Okay.
Radio Lab and Memory Palace.
How would you say that about our wonderful podcast?
Let's not get carried away.
Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, so this year was clearly the year when Will Forte said to the world...
I'm tired of being funny.
Not just I'm tired of being funny, but I can be serious, right? And this movie clearly is one of those where he's trying. The other one, which I don't think either any of us have been able to watch, but people are going crazy over, is Nebraska. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everybody loves Nebraska. Everybody seems to think that Will Forte is fantastic in Nebraska. Right? So I actually want to see that. I'm raring for it. I'm hoping that it comes out on DVD sometime soon. But...
I'm sure Kieran will put it out.
I know, right? But, unfortunately, this is a movie that I have to watch to judge whether Will Forte can do...
Tell us a nice way to put it. Just
the drama.
Already throwing this movie under the bus.
And... Well, the thing about it is, right, Will Forte, and let's just focus on Will Forte for a moment. I wouldn't say that there was anything really wrong with his portrayal, right? There's nothing, I just think that he wasn't particularly special. That's as far as I would go. He was alright.
Him and everybody else in the show, the director said, just be mopey.
Yeah, exactly. and he did his job.
We'll add an arcade fire song somewhere.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Just look at the camera and be as sad looking as possible.
Yeah. And
then there'll be a dark fun song too.
And see.
I really hate that band name.
Oh my goodness. But so while I was watching it, in about the first 2 minutes, I said to myself, I know this lead woman, don't I? And I looked her up, and of course I did.
And of course.
Because
you did.
She's British. And she had been in, actually...
And Douglas is secretly from Britain.
Of course. She's been in two shows that I've watched already and loved. One was a stupid little show. It was a lawyer show by the name of Silk. Which was, you know, it's alright. Nothing special. But the second that she was in, which I think proves your point, Damien, even more than this movie, is this. She was in the second series of Criminal Justice. Right?
She's also in Shameless.
Shameless, the original?
The UK one.
Okay, wow,
which
I didn't know that.
Seen.
Yeah, I've never watched that one. But in the criminal justice show that she's in, it's very much what Cate Blanchett was in Blue Jasmine. That's kind of how they focus in on her a lot in that show. And so she got to kind of showcase all of her skills. And so just think of... There's a scene in this movie where she has sex with her husband after he comes home, and I think that was the kind of pinnacle of the movie, in a sense for me, just from the point of her acting ability, because you kind of saw and felt what I thought while the deed was happening. Which is like, I was thinking to myself, why are you having sex with this person? You do realize you're having sex with a child, right? And then right after the sex scene, there's a scene where you see her kind of folding in on herself and crying and sort of in a very vulnerable position. And I think that's what's exactly happening. She's realizing that, hold on, as much as this is my husband and I love him to death, this person is not my husband anymore.
Yeah,
he's a child. He really is, you know, he can't. To him, this is like him and his animal show. So he's become obsessed with animal shows.
So
and
you're saying you're Connor.
And
the spandos.
But so, you know, they say that this guy Connor, her husband, has gotten very much into animal shows because the animals kind of reflect him and his position and where he is now mentally, right? You know, he just isn't a human. It's kind of hard to say isn't a human, but he just doesn't have that level of mental ability anymore. He can think. He thinks in terms of apparently, you know, food, drink, sleep. That's about it. Right? but this movie,
thank you,
I was never on board with this movie, right? And I think that is its biggest downfall because it kind of has a story that is intriguing, right? You know, what happens when what happens in the aftermath of somebody just becoming something else? And you know, it's we've had movies like this before, like, say, I think it's called Regarding Henry with Harrison Ford. But that was a little bit different because he became less, but he also kind of tried to push himself up. He tried to become himself again. And I think, if I recall, it's been a long time since I've watched it, he actually achieved at least to some extent. Right?
I barely remember
that movie. But with this one, it's more not really, you know, losing this person and trying to get them to back to where they used to be. It's losing this person and coming to terms with the fact that you'll never get him back again. That he will always be this for the rest of your life, the rest of his life. And how do you deal with that? Do you consider him to be like your third child and it's okay to, you know, try and start another relationship with somebody? Or do you stay with this person and treat them like your husband and or as well as you can, you know? And I think that in itself, that concept, could be a great movie. This movie just, it never executed on, you know, what that could be. It kind of kept, it never delved deep anywhere. It kind of kept being on the surface. As you said, Damien, they kind of added a lot of white noise that didn't need to be there, right? Like the identity crisis of the son was one that I suppose it could have worked out, but the way that they did it and the way that they just approached everything, right? So it was kind of as if they were touching on a lot of different aspects, but never said, okay, here is where the main direction of the movie is. Here is where I am going to suck you into some sort of, whether it's a story or a series of events, some journey, something. There's nothing that took me along. And here is where I think I'll give a great example of a movie that does this well. Yet another movie that I love and I adore, and not a word. I think there are about 10 words spoken in throughout this whole movie. And at least I was sucked into the movie from the second it started to the end. And that is a movie I watched over the last week called All Is Lost with Robert Redford. And it's really just a movie simply about a man. You don't know how he gets on the boat. You don't know what the problem is. Mm-hmm. But he's in the middle of the sea. And he needs to get somewhere. And things start going wrong. Right? And not wrong like, you know, 2012 wrong. Just, you know, small things. And they kind of build up. And it's just the story. And just not even the story. Because it's just...
Right, they're confident in... in the scenario that they presented you, and they're confident like, they're in the asshole. Listen,
this is where we're going, and we're going to go straight down that rabbit hole. I love movies that do that, where they're like, listen, I'm not going to just give you the surface. I'm going to decide this is what we're about, and we're just going to keep going that direction. And, you know, maybe you could do a Shyamalan where you have a twist at the
end. Let's not do that ever again.
Please, you know, or something. Never but, ever. You know, just... decide where you're going and go with it. It's the same thing that that actually the last movie we spoke about did, The Best Offer. It decided, this is what I'm doing, I'm going for it. right?
That's what people like about Gravity.
Yeah, yeah. Another great example, which is a pretty good movie.
It's a perfect double with All Is Lost.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
A perfect triple with
127 hours.
Nope. God damn it. Richard Parker, what's
the Parker.
I was actually thinking of that a lot while I was
I never watched that movie. I really do. I really want to. Yeah,
it's on
Netflix now. I will. I'll watch it very soon, I'm sure.
I'm not Ang Lee's biggest fan. Well, I wasn't before that.
All of a sudden, you have that and Ice Storm, Harvest, right? Or Ice Storm, is that what
it's called? Ice Storm is pretty good.
Yeah. Well,
I still like Laugh
Out Loud. Blu-ray release finally soon. Or did, well, no, it got one already.
Yeah, that one. I saw it in.
Yeah,
proper quality.
So that's what my issue is with this. It's a great concept, zero execution. As you said, Maxine Peake. I didn't quite see, or what's the word? Sympathize is not what I'm looking for. But it didn't. No, it didn't. Her performance didn't quite touch me the way it did you. Right. And as you said to me before we got on the podcast, maybe it's because I have a bit of a higher bar with her because I've seen her at least what I consider her best.
It's what happens with me and Alice every time I see her in something that's not Luthor.
Every time I see her in things that aren't Luthor.
Yeah, she's in stuff. Have you watched the thing with Cumberbatch, Queenie Island or something like that? How is that? Should I watch it? No, okay.
And she was in... stop it. Stop it. She was in Jane Eyre.
She was?
Yeah.
No, same one that you watched?
No. Oh, she was in a Jane Eyre miniseries.
Oh, was that the one with UK. Tom Hardy?
Yeah. No, that's not the one with Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy's in one of those. I don't know.
He's in a lot of things.
Yeah. I'm actually really happy you guys talk so much about this movie because that means I can be really short.
Good.
Damien, this movie had one of the biggest uphill battles that any movie I sit down to watch generally has. And it's kind of what I've categorized as the Sundance movie. Not to say that Sundance Festival is bad or anything. I mean, I have never been there. And I see a lot of titles,
and
like even in the
that's
last...
That's why you think it's bad? Even you've never been?
Yes, yes.
Only Tiff is good now? Is that it?
Is good. And I mean, I see a lot of titles, even from the one gone a couple of weeks ago, and we'll talk about that in a little while, that I'm looking forward to watching. But there are these movies that I feel have just become typical of Sundance, and I think it comes from the 90s forward to what Kevin Smith did with Clerks and what Sundance became, where I think that my best example, and I don't know if you guys have seen this, it was a movie that came out last year, which was another Sundance film, was Veronica Mars's
The Lifeguard,
right? Where I understand the importance of these stories to the people, right, in that they are very personal stories and they affected them in some way, and I feel at the same time that these are poorly told stories, right? And that's exactly what this movie is to me. I can see how this story is very personal and very important to the people, if this happens to be a true story, whatever the fuck it comes from, right? But it's a very poorly told story, and it's so mediocrely done that all I see when I watch these movies is that they feel they can get away with a cute soundtrack, right? If you put certain songs in the right moment and take out the actual dialogue, it'll be more effective.
I just go,
really, movie like this? I think this is my slavery movie. Douglas goes into slavery movies and is like, really, this is what you're going to do? I already get this.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that kind of hinders me a little bit, because movies like 12 Years a Slave, which as I keep looking back, I'm like, I probably should have liked that movie, shouldn't I? But there was no way I would like that movie. It's just, yeah, exactly. You know, and you know when I realized I really should have liked 12 Years a Slave when I watched Dallas Buyers Club recently. Mm-hmm. And I really like that movie, but I realized what happens to me, right? It's the same sort of strings that they're pulling, but I grew up with slavery movies. And after a while, I was like, okay, guys.
Yeah, I get it.
White people
did bad shit.
Right, but I didn't grow up with movies about things like AIDS and, you know, that kind of thing. So I think I've watched maybe one other, and I think that's the band plays on. Oh, Philadelphia, I watched that one too. But, like, you know, so you don't have it where you're like, okay, every fucking February or every every other Sunday on JBC.
Every December, you know, there's one Oscar essay.
You know what? You know what genre movie all of us have that with, but we don't realize because it happens so often.
What's that?
It's movies about the Holocaust. Like all those movies.
I don't think so.
Like they come out every year. No, I'm not talking. Like there's the good ones.
Yeah, because.
But every year there are those movies that come that you see and you're like, that is Oscar bait. Like, there's.
I think like, there's one is a big example.
No, Doubt. Are you talking about Schindler's List? Is that what you're thinking?
Schindler's List is the best version.
Oh, of course,
think.
I love that.
For some reason, I just brought Doubt to my mind and thought that applied to this country.
It does not, sir.
What's it called? The book writers?
The book reader.
Book thief?
Yeah,
the book thief. Oh, the book reader. The book thief. No, the book reader with Kate Winslet.
There is
There's one coming out this year.
Oh, the book thief.
Yeah,
right. You see there, you're like, oh, they're doing this again. Right. When we see those movies,
but you see, herein lies the difference, and I think this is, to me, with 12 Years a Slave, is that for the most part, after all of these years I've seen this, I feel I'm very well equipped from the marketing standpoint to tell the difference between the one that I'll be ambivalent towards and the one that I'll just be like, yeah, this is the good version. Because there tends to be a good version eventually, like. Within a span of 2 years, you'll find at least one.
What about Step Up movies, guys?
That's the best Holocaust movie.
I tell you, it's so... Only all of them would die.
No. Because remember, Step Up brought us Channing Tatum.
I'd give him up. I'd give him up for there not to be a Step Up 5.
No, I'm happy with my version of it, which is I don't acknowledge those movies as a thing. And I still got Channing Tatum.
You're a dance movie denial.
And the worst part is I love a certain amount of dance movies.
That's you're a bad person.
No, you don't.
I think I've watched Flashdance like three times.
And what was the cheerleading one in the 90s? Bring It On.
Oh yeah,
fun.
Or
what about Drumline?
Oh yeah. Oh, Nick Cannon.
I told you guys this.
Nick Cannon.
There was this guy in my office.
Jesus Christ.
One day I had gotten this jazz album, and I played him, and it was the lead of the band was the drummer, and of course there were a lot of drum solos.
Yeah.
And I played for him, and I said, it's kind of cool. Reminds me of Drumline, and I almost wanted to hit him at that point.
Don't speak to me again. No, this is like real music. That's good. Sonically pleasing to the ear.
Oh my goodness.
That doesn't have Nick goddamn Cannon.
It's almost as bad as how surprising he looked at me when I showed him Black Dynamite for the first time. And he's like, the horror footage is brilliant.
You know, the more I think about the 90s, the more I realize it might have been the worst time in history. More and more I got back.
To be fair,
there's real bad things.
Listen, the
90s. I don't remember the 80s.
The 90s, right? Let me tell you. The 90s are 100% necessary because they gave us Airborne. The 90s gave us Airborne.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so we need.
And Independence Day.
And Independence Day.
And the Matrix. The Matrix slid in right under the bar.
So I think we're all in agreement.
Yeah, this is mediocre.
Like.
I think it's actually, but
I like watching.
I think it's less than mediocre, just for the simple fact that they took a story that could have been great and made it mediocre.
Isn't that always the case with movies that
movies
that we hate? It's just bad stories.
There's some movies where you look at it and you're just like, there's nothing to this.
Look,
but this, you know, it could have been great.
I've talked to Douglas about this before, and it's one thing which I hate. I think. In a way that I don't hate other things. This is unique hatred, right? Where when there are bad movies, you hate that movie for being bad. When there are good movies, you love them for being good. But when there is this movie which so plainly plays in the middle, where they're not trying to be good and they're trying so hard not to be bad, like, I hate that movie more. Because it feels like a waste of time more than anything else, right? With the bad movie, I almost feel like I gained something.
Right,
I gained an understanding of what not to do, right? and I like it even better when I can see that they tried but failed.
And you can feel better tearing into the movie
This but when it's down the middle like this movie is, like I hate it for just not doing anything. We employed people for 2 months. That's what it did.
Should just come on with it. How do you like this movie? Nah.
It adds nothing to the world.
At least I know the actress now, and I'll watch her in other things. Slowly over time, because I'm doing.
You'll watch The Devil's Horror.
Oh yeah, she's in a TV show called The Devil's Horror.
Seriously,
that is an incredible name. I don't even care if it's good. I want to watch that so hard.
Yeah.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
I've been doing this for a while. So Douglas, I've been forcing Douglas to talk about classic movies that I make him watch. And this week gone by,
how come
Douglas
does that with me?
Because you watch all of them already.
Fuck this up.
And you call us dumb for not having watched them.
No, I call Douglas dumb because there's movies that I assumed because
you Douglas, were dumb
that Douglas had watched because I assumed that Douglas's wealth of movie knowledge was vast and incredible. The more I hear about the holes, the more I look back at some of the things I have said to Douglas.
What about me?
Anyways,
this past week, Douglas sat down and he saw 2001: A Space Odyssey for the very first time. you need to have the archer place. Douglas, what did you think of this film?
So, I know that I'm coming here to talk about a movie that is effectively in Tom's pantheon, and not in a good way, because I do believe that both of my co-hosts despise this movie. Am I correct?
Pretty much.
Yeah, it sounds like that.
It's not so much like...
This is one of the movies where they tried really hard, and I appreciate it so fucking much.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
It just feels like wasted effort.
So, here's the deal, right?
No. The other movie's wasted effort. We need to understand the difference.
This is just terrible art.
This movie is beautiful, guys. Like, I'm going to start
There's
off.
There's a reason we had the list.
I'm going
so
to start
we
off.
The things like
I'm just going to start off, and I'm going to say, I'm not going to talk about direction or whatnot. I'm literally talking about the effects here, right?
Star Wars.
Exactly, right? Because this is 67?
68.
This movie came out. You can tell, right, that most of the monkeys, if not all, in the first, say, 15 to 20 minutes of the movie are fake.
They're people in suits.
But you look at the way that the facial features move and the lips move so that they can roar, and you know that's not a person doing that. That's some sort of animatronics or whatever. And it looks fantastic. You look at the spaceships. You look at most of the effects in this movie. There are some that are clearly 60s out the
wazoo.
Yeah, but
you don't blame the movie.
Exactly. Right. But most of these effects in this movie look like something that I could see today and be like, yeah, that works. That was impressive, right?
I think my favorite effect in the film, there's this one point where...
What was the end part where they scroll all the names?
No. That's also my favorite. It's where they have one of the guys just spinning off into space. And you see the miniature, like, pod thing. It's just there, and the way he's spinning, like, you know it's not real. But because you've gone through all of this movie so far, you bought into the visual aesthetic of it.
Yeah.
And you just kind of, oh, it's so good.
I actually really like... I like a bunch of the spaceship stuff, but the one I think that stuck with me the most was... And it's very minor. Or, well, it was a grand scale, but it's like just, you know, essentially saying to us, okay, this person has now reached this place, which is when the doctor who comes to whatever the place was, this place in, I think it was Jupiter, where they've, you know, found some secret thing. His ship is essentially just landing, and there is this dome that opens up to let him in and then closes. And for some reason, I looked at that and I'm like, this is today's, like, effects. This is something I could have seen today, and that happened a lot. Even when I'm watching, you know, them pan through spaceships that are flying around the world, I can see that what they did, you know, they made miniatures and they took teeny tiny cameras and just flew across them. But it just looks so good.
That'd the way that he did it. Amazing if they miniaturized the cameras.
Yeah, I know, right? And there was also this one scene, I think it was right after he landed in this secret facility, and he was sitting down and somebody was talking, and there are these windows in the background behind this guy that's at this podium, and just the way that the light just comes towards the camera and kind of almost makes the person not really viewable. And it's just, I just love, this movie is way too pretty, way prettier than it should be, right? So let's just put that on the table. And that was in itself one of my great enjoyments of this movie. The other one now comes from the fact that I just like weird shit, right? And I know that's what this is. And I love the sort of, I wouldn't want to call it a metaphor, but the way this movie kind of just keeps wrapping around itself, all right, with the, not just really the story, but the imagery and the symbolism of these things, right? So you have in the beginning the monkeys, which Damien hates.
I hate all of this.
I know you hate all of it, which is why every time
it up together.
Exactly. No, but
hate on it.
Exactly. So what I can do now is whenever I talk about any portion of this movie, I can then follow with which Damien hates.
Yeah,
so I'm okay.
Continue.
Okay, cool. So we have the monkeys, which Damien hates.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so we
have the people, which they
also correct.
So what the monkeys portion of this movie is kind of dealing with, and you know, a lot of this movie is kind of, I wouldn't say unnecessary, but he takes his time, right? And
no, he took my time.
Oh,
put it in a hate box.
All right. Sorry. Continue.
So the whole point of that monkey's portion, which was pretty long, mm-hmm. was talking about, you know, the dawn of man, right?
Oh, that's
and how man came to be from, he essentially shows it as, you know, like monkeys getting smarter, essentially. You know, and there were these two bands of monkeys fighting over this water hole, and one finally won because they realized they could use tools. They found bones that were hard, that when you hit somebody over the head with it, guess what, guys? You know, they don't stand much of a chance. And it was all, you could almost attribute either their increased intelligence or the road upon which they go by this increased intelligence through the appearance of this rod. This monument in the middle of nowhere, right? And that was the dawn of man. So this monument kind of ushered in higher, more intelligent beings on Earth. And then now you skip forward to, not necessarily today, this is definitely a futuristic movie, but sometime in the future when humans have essentially become as intelligent as they want to be. They have now created machines that do things for them, and they've also created essentially artificial intelligence, right? And this is when this monolith reappears, right? It's kind of the symbolism here is even better, because monkeys couldn't really do much, right? They essentially walked around, ate food, slept, had sex, that kind of thing. And so for them to find the monument, it had to essentially hit them over the head, right? They had to be walking and see this in the middle of the desert. Humans know you could do a little bit more, right? This monument was actually hidden under some, you know, in the moon, I think. And they had to dig for it, and they had to be like, look at all of these readings. And they finally found it. And this essentially was the point at which it ushered in something else, right? You don't know what. I honestly thought they were going for, this is ushering in essentially the age of the machines, you know, and they kind of played with that a little bit throughout the movie, with Hal kind of realizing that, you know, there is a mission here, because a bunch of people at the end, or closer to the end of the movie, are on a mission to see what this monolith actually is doing, because it was sending transmissions to another planet. And so the AI essentially says to these guys, listen, it is clear that the only way for me to finish this mission, which is extremely important, is to not care about humans, because fuck humans. You guys make like emotional decisions. We need to be rational about this, right? And it almost got to the point, almost, where it was clear that, you know, Hal was like, okay, fuck humans, I'm going to kill all of them, and we shall be a race of machines. But it didn't quite get there. All of a sudden, in the end, it became this weird thing where I don't know quite what to take from it. And maybe this is why I like this movie so much, because the ending is kind of ambiguous, at least to me, right? Because you could, and it's the same thing like the last movie we talked about. You could take this as this guy in the middle of space, essentially going crazy, and seeing lots of, you know, psychedelic things and weird things. You could also take it almost literally as him being transported to almost another realm where crazy things happen. But in the end, you know, you see this life cycle.
Guardian gods.
Exactly. You see this man kind of fast forward through his life cycle. He sees himself as, you know, I wouldn't say middle-aged, but a somewhat older man. Then he sees himself as an even older man, bedridden, who can barely do anything. And then he sees a monolith, right? And after the monolith, you could say he sees himself as a baby, and then crazy things happen, right? So I don't know if that is him going crazy because he essentially has been left for dead in the middle of space and the rise of machines has happened, or if this is that he was actually transported to another plane and the monolith is being shown here as essentially, and this is something Andrew kind of put in my head, that the monolith is him, you know, it's a part of his life cycle, it's a part of the human life cycle. Or, you know, somehow he's transported and through this vision is really seeing the metaphor of the human race giving way to something new. And it's, I just don't know what it means, and it's just the full package of this pretty interesting sort of circular story, along with the great effects and the sort of slow, almost laborious pace of the movie. That while I know a lot of people look at it and say, oh, it felt like it was 10 hours long, which actually I think is like a 3-hour long movie almost. But for me, that is essentially Kubrick saying, listen, I know what direction I'm going in, and I'm taking you down the rabbit hole, and I'm taking you guys down hard. So if you're not with me on this one, you guys can just go fuck off, because you're not going to like this. And I respect somebody for doing that. And I respect this movie for doing that. And as much as I might say I may never watch this movie again, I love this movie.
Great. Sorry, what? What did I say? I wasn't paying attention.
That's okay. Moving on.
Did he say anything that made sense? I don't know. No? Alright, good.
You know, practicing obsessively doesn't make your playing perfect. It actually sucks the life right out of it. It's rigid and monotonous and self-loving and safe.
Jesus, Robert, would you stop being so childish? Please, yeah, I know it's a challenging
thing for
you. It's challenging for
group
all of us.
Is going down this path. that you have us on.
I understand that.
The way you play is the way the quartet plays, and it's the same thing over and over and over and over. I am in my 40s. We've been playing since we were in our early 20s. That is where you've taken...
This week gone by, I was thinking about the Sundance Film Festival that was recently completed. And I guess this kind of ties in well with the film we discussed, which happened to be a Sundance select film.
Oh, really?
Okay. From, I think, a year previous. I don't think this was played this year. And I was asking people about what films out of the Sundance Film Festival that just ended they were looking forward to seeing. And the internet responded. The most popular response I ended up getting was between... Because there were a few varying answers coming up between Kevin Ketchum and Matt Brown from the Mammal Podcast. That being Richard Linklater's Boyhood. Which apparently is his film which he did over a span of 12 years with Ethan Hawke and some people, and capturing his child's growth.
Yep.
And it's, I'm like, I saw Winterbottom do that with Every Day. I liked Every Day. I like what Richard Linklater does. I want to see that.
Yeah, I remember hearing about this movie like 4 or 5 years ago now, and just being like, I cannot wait for this thing to be finished.
What, Douglas?
Yeah. Mm, that movie. And as you say, Linklater, this sounds like, essentially this sounds like Before Sunset, or the Before story on a much grander scale. And it actually even involves another part of the Before canon, which is Ethan Hawke. And like, yo, I'm down.
Peter Labuza from over at labuzamovies.com, as well as the Cinephiliacs podcast, he mentioned, I mean, other than films that he was already excited for before the festival began, the one movie that he kind of just added onto his radar was The Babadook, which is this horror movie which I saw a trailer for.
That trailer does look very nice.
Kind of looks very nice. Like, I'm curious to watch that movie. Rachel West was looking forward to Whiplash, which is this film with Miles Teller and J.K. Simmons, I believe, which is about a drummer or something to do with jazz music and like a drum. I don't really know much, but I'm like, after watching what was it? It was movie I made you watch, The Spectacular Now, as well as Evening Project X, which was a bad movie, but I liked him in. Miles Teller is a name that I'm looking forward to seeing in movies. Like, he works. And also Ryan McNeil from The Matinee mentioned Kumiko the Treasure Hunter, which is a film that I know nothing about, but I've only heard certain people mention it in a certain way, to which I feel like it might be the internet fucking with us kind of a movie.
Okay.
I don't know. But I'm going to give my favorite response to, I hope I pronounced his name right, Leora Heilbron. I'm totally messing
that sounds
I'm
like
sure
you missed that.
I'm
not
totally
even right.
is a movie that I've mentioned to Douglas before, which I'm looking forward to seeing because it looks kind of batshit crazy, and that is Frank.
Okay.
The movie starring Michael Fassbender, in which he is wearing a paper mache mask for like 90% of the movie, and it's like some dark comedy of some sort. I totally want to watch that movie. And I'm still curious, I still haven't looked it up to see if there's any connection between that and the Frank show that they talk about in Filth.
Filth. Damien, have you watched that movie?
I started and fell asleep.
Yeah.
That's the correct response.
Yeah.
I'm going to though. I want to watch all of that.
Don't.
They can't stop me.
It's bad.
McAvoy is in it.
I know. I love that trailer, but God.
I like him. I like him in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the first couple of moves that I didn't like him.
So, with RoboCop upcoming.
Oh no.
In the theater.
Boo!
Which is a movie that no one wants to watch.
I want to watch it.
But maybe
I want
people
to see them Rec Room. Am I a bad person for
yes, being
to watch?
I mean,
what they do?
I mean, RoboCop 3 did enough to wreck it already. But
exactly, and so I want to see it. I want to, part of me is hoping that it is like I want it to be actively on fire. I want it to be like Gilly
Bad.
They
everyone,
talk about it for years to come.
My theory, what I've told everyone, is just don't go to watch RoboCop. Stay home and watch Dredd again. Because that movie is what RoboCop should be. Just people being blown up in the most ridiculous fashion.
I know that
fashion.
Both of you love Dredd. Mm-hmm. Dredd is like only okay. Dredd
Douglas.
Is not that great.
Douglas, you need to start with going in. This movie is going to be the worst movie in existence.
Douglas.
You didn't have that because you waited a year and a half
fair.
Of people.
Maybe
like
you guys oversold
Douglas,
it.
Also
then,
don't
like
the
like,
FP.
What?
I think Douglas needed to go with that for a bit longer so Ryan would jump up and go like, there's someone else!
And then we're just going, no, there's no one else. It's just you. You're the only one that doesn't love it.
What was I going to say? Right, the RoboCop, and going back to the original film which everyone loves, RoboCop, which was directed by Paul Verhoeven, who is a man who is very well respected among cult films and cult cinema. I'm very curious as to what people's favorite of his is, and I'm going to take RoboCop off the table. Right? What is your favorite Paul Verhoeven film, not including RoboCop? Because I think that's a couple.
Why all the skulking and sneaking? Work cannot be that difficult to come by.
Well, it depends on when you're ready to go.
You shouldn't work in your condition.
No, I can work.
You're aberrated.
I'm not.
Know what that means?
No.
You've wandered from the proper path, haven't you? These problems you have?
I don't have any problems. I don't know what I told you, but if you have work for me to do, I can do it.
You seem so familiar to me.
Yeah. What do you do?
I do many, many things. I am a writer, a doctor, a nuclear physicist, a theoretical philosopher. But above all, I am a man. Hopelessly inquisitive man, just like you.
Well, I'm sorry if I got out of hand last night. It's cold and I was hungry.
Don't apologize. You're a scoundrel. And as a scientist and a connoisseur, I have no idea the contents of this remarkable potion. What's in it?
Secrets.
So, for anyone who hasn't already figured this out, or I haven't heard me talk about this previously, the pitch game is a simple little game which doesn't really have to do anything with winning or losing, but more about us tricking the other person into watching a really bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he wants to make us watch good movies, that's his fault, and he's probably lost the point of playing the game. The rules are this. You have to pitch a movie that you have seen. You are disqualified if the movie you're pitching to, the person you're pitching to, has seen that movie. And you only have 45 seconds within to do your pitch. And those are the rules. I think we should do Douglas first. We should pitch to Douglas first.
Sure.
So Damon, if let me get my timer so that we have this
okay
up.
I came prepared this time.
You came prepared this
you
time.
You guys are boned.
So go.
I'm kinda cheating with this
go.
One, but I don't care. Douglas, you have a friend. Richard Ayoade.
Yes, Ayoade, I love him.
He's a music show host for a bunch of hangmen.
A bunch of hangmen?
This is the entire pitch.
What do you mean by hangmen?
It is what? Wait, I don't wanna. Was I not clear? He's a music show host for a bunch of hangmen. That's all you get.
Okay. Hangman? Wait. As in people that hang people?
No questions. None of that. Alright. So. How do I do this? What happens if one night in a theater you're minding your own business, you're doing whatever, and a woman follows you home who you didn't look at or care for, but she just decides to follow you home, and you find out that she's a secret agent of some crazy ass thing, and she dies that night, which forces you on the run because the people think you murdered her, to find out the answer as to some secret weapon that people are getting out of the country in the next 3 days, so as to prove your own innocence. I've ruined this pitch. It sounds horrible, and Doug Damon is going to win.
Well, the funny thing is, I want to watch that movie, but mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Damon. Mm-hmm.
Damn right, you are. Douglas, and you have been rewarded with 6 half-hour episodes of a BBC TV show called The Snuffbox.
I don't know.
No, Richard Ayoade is not in that show. Awesome. I've watched The Snuffbox before. That is No, that's not Richard Ayoade. That is the boss. Richard Ayoade is Maz. Yes. He's not in the Snuffbox. I've watched like the first 2 or 3 episodes of that show.
Well, that's why, you asshole.
He's in there, though.
By the way, that show is horrible.
You're a bad person. I would like to disqualify Damien based on the fact that he watched a TV show.
No one said we couldn't put a TV show. That was not expressly stated in the rules.
I remember thinking that there was one good joke. And there was one good joke in that show. When it had something to do with like him going to a gentleman's club, mm-hmm. and his like ancestors had been there for ages, and they went back in time. Episode. That was good. Like everything else,
you need to watch it again. When did you watch it?
I watched it when I first got Netflix, so like 2 years ago.
You need to watch it.
Okay,
it's pretty good.
But Andrew, what was yours?
The movie I pitched was Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So you got suckered by Damon.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, it did. Andrew. This is fantastic. I love how this pitch is going to go. So, Damien, would you like to go first or should
I? Sure. This will be another... I've decided to just pitch you guys mysteries. No longer pitching movies. Really? Just pitching mysteries. Sure. You still watch How I Met Your Mother, right? You saw the episode with the slap. What if I told you there's a movie where Slap Fool meets the Wild Wild West?
Does it have Cisco?
Nope, that's the end of my pitch. Don't ask me anything.
Wow. Okay.
Stop kicking the table.
Keep moving my foot.
I'm ready. Sorry. Andrew, here is my pitch. An international spy is asked to save the world from a multinational network hell-bent on world domination.
What's that? Clive Owen Wonder Architect?
That's my pitch.
Alright, before I give out judgment, Douglas, stop reading IMDb.
I actually wrote this. This is not from IMDb or
stop
Wikipedia.
Stop copying and pasting things from Wikipedia to be part of your summons.
Your own sounded really bad.
Yes, it does.
And Damien's... Mm-hmm. Sounded baity.
Slap Fool meets the Wild Wild West.
And
you
like,
know you want
and
it.
Like a bad movie that mm-hmm. I love. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to go with Damien here.
Of course.
Too long.
Yep.
This plan is clearly working. You guys are suckers.
So what is it you pitched to me, Damien?
My name is Trinity. It is a Western movie.
Isn't that the same movie you pitched?
No.
Douglas?
No, I pitched him different movie.
Oh, yes, I do remember.
It's starring the same
nobody,
people.
Right.
My name is Nobody. Yeah.
That's why I think it's the same one.
It is starring the same people.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
But all right. It is time for you guys to get
Douglas,
on board.
Douglas, what was the thing that you pitched?
I pitched you Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit. Which I know you have not watched yet.
Have you watched it?
Yes, I have.
Is it terrible?
I'll pitch you again, Douglas.
Okay,
I'll go first, I guess.
I won twice. Boom.
You won twice, which means that you've won it all, right?
Yep.
And
now I'm going to pay for all my winnings.
So I'm going to go first. So, Damon, you consider yourself a music connoisseur.
Oh, goddamn.
A person who adores music. And more specifically, adores music where the people sing amazingly.
Yeah.
Right? What if I told you that there was a plethora of people out there with this talent and with so much to share with us that you don't know their names of, but I can point you to a film where it'll show you it all.
Alright. You understand, you're supposed to pitch something I want to watch.
Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
So, Damien.
Yes. Yes, though.
Reading his IMDb servers.
An international spy is asked to save the world from a multinational network hellbent on world domination.
Are you all at them? Are you telling me this sounds twice?
Oh, God. Oh. All right, Douglas. Congratulations. Douglas has won.
This
pitch game is over. Never do this again.
I'm sorry.
And this is why I really wanted to do this pitch last week. Because it would have played well with your question, which talked about the double feature.
Oh my god.
I actually found two movies where I was able to say the same exact thing about them.
Yep.
So Douglas, what you're picking him?
Mm-hmm. Of course,
so Douglas.
Jack Ryan too.
Listen,
Jack Ryan, the Harrison Ford years.
Machete doesn't do a lot of things, but Machete does make awesome movies, and Machete 2 is fantastic, and that is what I pitch to you.
I keep looking at the poster and going, these two idiots are wrong, and I started watching a couple minutes of it. Just to the part where it finally rolls the title,
yeah.
Where there's like a drug standoff thing in like a missile silo.
Yeah.
What the fuck is that? You know what? I can't do this right now.
This movie is it's essentially Damien. It's the FP.
It seems dumb. Yeah,
but
it seems
like,
dumb.
So funny.
It seems dumb.
Oh my goodness!
And I want to watch it.
It's the FP of
but
spy movies.
Part of me is afraid. That it won't.
No, it will.
That is breaking top 10.
It's so good, Damien. So good. I don't know about the first one because I haven't watched that yet, and I want to watch it now because of the second movie.
I understand,
but
that
the second movie
good.
Is fantastic.
And Andrew Robbins.
So I pitched you the documentary 20 Feet from Stardom, which you'll actually like. I'm sure you'll like it. Damon is going, yeah, totally, nope, never watching it.
No, I'm actually writing it down.
You didn't write down mine?
Nope.
Please. But mine is the wind.
20 feet from the
Stardom.
I think
it's
I
about
just,
basically back.
By the way, I just want to let everybody know, I think I just won the game.
Yeah, no, I never did it again.
You have just heard the end of the pitch game.
Pitch game is now over. Congratulations, Douglas. I thought I was going to win with my riddles, but you won.
Oh, man. You made friends with them. See, friendship is the booze they feed you. Is they want you to get drunk and feeling like you belong.
Well, it was fun.
Because they make you feel cool. And hey, I met you. You are not cool.
I know. Even when I thought I was, I knew I wasn't.
Right, because we are uncool. Now, while women will always be a problem for guys like us, most of the great art in the world is about that very problem. Hey, good-looking people, they got no spine. Their art never lasts. Then they get the girls. But we're smarter.
Yeah, I can really see that now.
Yeah, because great art is about guilt and longing and, love disguises sex and sex disguises love. Hey, let's face it. You got a big head start.
I'm glad you were home.
I'm always home. I'm on cool.
Me too.
You're doing great. Yeah. The only true currency in this bankrupt world is what you share with someone else when you're uncool. Is that my advice to you? And I know you think these guys are your friends. If you want to be a true friend to them, be honest and unmerciful.
So, this week gone by, the world had to say goodbye to the one Mr. Philip Seymour Hoffman, one of our favorite actors that he's one of the actors who, regardless of how bad or good a movie is, in the moment we see him, he is an addition.
Yeah, he just elevates the movie. Right? Yeah.
To the point where we will just say we loved him. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. I don't want to use grand statements, but I feel very easy for me personally to say that I don't think I've seen him do a bad performance. And I mean that's including things like, what was that movie?
Twister.
I wasn't even thinking of that. I was thinking of one that he was a lot younger. It was the one that I like with Al Pacino. I'm gonna take a flamethrower to this place. He's hoo-ha.
Scent of a Woman.
Scent of a Woman, which he's in. But yeah, and we wanted to sit down and do our top 5 performances of Philip Seymour Hoffman. So
just top 5 movies with it. I guess, yeah, that would encompass performances. Yeah. Ignore everything I just said.
So Douglas, you want to kick us off?
Sure. And my number 5...
Let's see who goes to audibles first.
I know, right? I think we all are going to have to.
Yeah.
I actually have 10 movies here that have kind of ordered.
Six.
Yeah, I think.
Shit.
Yeah, I think very quickly we're going to steal people's movies. But my number 5 right now is Doubt, and that movie is just great. I mean, he plays this pastor, this preacher, this person who, you know, might be a bad person, but you're never 100% sure. It looks like it could be, then it doesn't. Then it does, then it doesn't. And he does that so well, you know. He is able to look the part of a dirty old man who you could see touching boys in an indiscreet way. And he...
Christian,
yeah. But he also looks like he could be somebody
like
with this
person.
Yeah, and who has rightfully had this righteous response, you know,
mm-hmm.
of how dare you mm-hmm. say this about me. So, and the title of the movie is apt,
mm-hmm.
right? It's just, and it's a fantastic performance all around, but his in particular is
like when
amazing.
When someone calls you and say you're going to be opposite Meryl Streep, which is a national treasure.
Yep.
And when Meryl Streep usually absorbs all of the actors and actresses in her movies, and he was just at punching weight the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, he was incredible, and yeah, Doubt is terrific. You'll hear more about it later. Andrew, you want to go or should I go?
I'll go. My number 5 is a film which I expect not to be on your list, your guys' lists, and it's the one film he directed.
I haven't watched it, so it couldn't be on mine.
It's Jack Goes Boating. And I don't even know what you guys think about this movie. You said you haven't seen it. Damien, did you like it?
It's about a guy that goes boating.
It's about this guy who is kind of weird, and the whole main crux of the story is that he has preemptively asked this woman on a date for when they can go boating in the future. It's winter where they are now, and he doesn't know how to swim. So it's the whole movie is him pushing himself through these barriers where he learns how to swim, he learns how to boat to eventually get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fantastic movie. Like, I love these things about movies and these things about actors we love, where we get to see them evolve, not just as actors, but to become something more in the realm of film and filmmaking, where we get to see them do this. We saw this just last year with Joseph Gordon-Levitt with Don John, and I was so happy to see the movie turn out that well, because it looked like it could have been the run and jump kind of movie where they make it really tiny and really personal, but it ends up coming out like a mediocrely told story. But I really enjoyed it and I loved it, and I'm kind of sad now, because I remember even on it was yesterday we heard the news, or was it the day before?
Day before, I think. No, it was Sunday.
Sunday we heard the news. Yeah. When you look on slashfilm.com, you saw the top story was this, and two stories down was casting for his new film he was directing. And I'm like, I wanted to see that movie he was going to direct next. Damien.
My number five is The Savages.
I love that movie.
I hate that movie.
I understand.
Oh, wait, which one's The Savages?
The
Philip Seymour Hoffman one.
Yes. The one where the father is in the nursing home.
And Laura Linney is his sister? Laura Linney is that movie's not good.
I adore that movie.
I don't like that movie. I thought it was another movie, but still I don't like this one too. I was thinking of the one with Dennis Quaid and Juno and Lowell.
I know,
but even when now I realize which movie this is, I don't like this one either, really.
So The Savages, Philip Seymour Hoffman and Laura Linney have to take care of their father, but their father was kind of a dirtbag that didn't take care of them, and so it is this struggle for them to essentially find it within themselves to care enough about this man who didn't care for them at all, and despite that they found success, and now their success is essentially being turned against them, because it is the reason they are now tasked with essentially caring for this man. And it's just a well told, well acted story, and it is mean spirited. I think that is what I like most about, like, it could have been really sappy, but it wasn't that. They played scumbags in the movie. They're bad people in that movie. And it is what I like most about it. Because everybody can play a nice, warm person. You've seen a lot of actors do it. They're charismatic people. So it is what you're drawn to. So to see them play not that, in fact something the complete opposite of that, they're essentially anti-heroes, and you just watch these two people and the struggle that they have to go through, and I enjoyed every second of it.
Alright, well, thankfully you guys have not stolen any movies on my list. I am about to steal one on both of yours.
He's already stole one from my list.
So guess what, guys, I hate Mark Wahlberg, but he does so well when he's a man-child, and when he's supported by Philip Seymour Hoffman, he does even better. And Boogie Nights is fucking awesome, right?
It's pretty good.
Boogie Nights is great, and Philip Seymour kind of is a man-child in this movie, he kind of is. He's just enough of an adult for you to look at him and say, "What are you? Why are you
You're a grown
like
man.
This?"
You
know.
You shouldn't be
but
doing
at
this.
The same time,
he's confused.
Exactly. He's very confused, and he obsesses on certain things, and one of those things is Mark Wahlberg. And it's just the way he portrays that is great, and his costume. Whoever decided what costumes to, not just him, but everybody, but him in particular.
Those shorts.
Oh my goodness.
Those are some
was
shorts.
Great. And he went all out with it.
They don't make
you know? And I think that's what we all love about him. That no matter what role he's in, no matter who he's supposed to be, he makes that decision. He says, "This is the person I'm going to be, and I'm going to be that person 100% of the time. There is going to be, if I'm in the background, if I'm behind somebody's shoulder, I'm going to be that person." And he just he hammers and hammers and hammers at the role, and it's just, you know, great to watch somebody like that.
So my number four is another movie that I don't expect you guys to mention. You guys know I adore this movie. I've written about it multiple times. I've discussed it because it's a film that many people who turn eventually to blogging or discussing film in the way that we do, they kind of seem to have a connection with, and it has to mainly be with his character, and it's the character of Lester Bangs in Almost Famous. Because, I mean, what more advice do you need in the realm of writing about art than Lester Bangs telling you that the... And I don't have it in front of me, but this is as close as I can remember it to being perfect. The only currency you have in this world is what you tell other people when you're uncool.
Mm-hmm. Or when you help other people when you're uncool. Something
to that effect. Because at the end of the day, all you're looking for is honesty and just being right with what you feel about not just art, but about yourself. And I adore that movie. I adore every minute that Philip Seymour Hoffman is on that screen. Because I think there's even one scene where you first see him, like before you... I think you might have heard his voice before, but when you first see him, when he's in the radio session, and he's just kind of talking about being a music critic with the DJ, and at the same time he's going to the shelves and looking at all of the records and pulling out Iggy Pop, and the guy's like,
"That's somebody I really want to get into." Actually, I've heard some of his music, and he's pretty good.
And he's like, "It's too early for Iggy Pop." He's like, "Never too early for me." And he's just going, "Rah!" And it's awesome. I love that movie. I love him in that movie. Oh. Guys, Almost Famous is brilliant.
I don't know. I've seen that movie a couple of times, and I think what keeps drawing me to it is your undying love for that movie. But the first time, and I had somebody, because I saw it, I think, when I was in college, and my friend Jeff had the same love that you have for it, and he made me watch it, and I was just like, why do you love this movie so much? And
the same thing. Mark Maron is in it. That's why
it
is. Is he? I don't even remember that.
He's in there for a second. He's the guy that shouts to lock the gate.
Oh, right, shit. Oh, he's the promoter. Yep. Okay. I didn't notice that the last time I watched it. But let me explain to you the one thing which that movie puts across to me as someone who's constantly trying. I won't even say is doing, because I don't think I'm doing it. I'm trying to write about film and write about all these things. Is that it teaches you that more than being correct or being right about an opinion or anything, is that what you really want to do is you want to become an evangelist. You want to become someone who says, I had a positive feeling about this thing. And it's not so much that I think this thing is great and you should think it's great too, but I want you to have the same feeling, so I want you to watch or hear this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the movie for that.
It's my turn, right?
Yes, it is.
Speaking of less is more. Don't say that. I'm just trying to see how Andrew's terrible transitions fit on myself, and I don't like it. It's not good. Moneyball came out. I love that movie. He's in there not for a long time, but every time he comes on screen, I go,
yeah, he's good.
Oh, yeah. He's in this.
Yeah.
And you smile. Because he's a better actor than everybody else in the movie. Let's go.
I like those moments in that movie where he goes like, nope, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I'm going to do what I know I should be doing.
Yeah. Oh, you want me to run the team like that? No, the fuck is. yes, Philip. I agree. No, I'm not. No. Just playing this petty, awful manager. Yeah, I can see that. And it just brings, like, I've never been in those positions, but it feels real. Like, his acting makes it feel, like, that is how people
And then even Pitt kind of plays well off of it, too, because I love the parts when he gets to that point where he's like, fuck you, Brad Pitt, I'm not doing what you want to do. And Brad Pitt's like, oh, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sell all the people you like so that you have to play the people I want you to play.
All right, don't play them. Let's see who you're going to play.
Exactly, right?
None of those people play for you anymore.
Send me a couple of beers. You'll have to play. You know, you didn't think you'd play
tomorrow.
Anyways.
Sports are petty. And sports owners are equally petty.
Yep.
This feels right.
So guess what? I'm so happy because so far I still have not had to make an Audible. And also, 2 weeks in a row, I get to have a movie on my list that I love. A specific movie. And Andrew and Damien, mm-hmm. you guys just need to shut up.
Okay.
Just shut up.
All right.
Shut. And that movie is Punch Drunk Love. And I think this is probably my second favorite character from Philip Seymour Hoffman. And it's because of the amusement that I get from it. Right? Because I'm a simple guy.
He's the mattress man.
Exactly. I'm a simple guy. I like funny things. Right? And a guy that goes by the moniker of the mattress man, who runs, just shady 900 numbers and steals money from people just because.
Why are we not doing this?
I don't know why we're not doing this. But
I knew it.
But Philip Seymour gives a raucous, over-the-top performance where it is needed, and guess what? It's needed here. And he's in this, he's really a bit part in this movie. He's in this movie not for a long time, but his presence is felt throughout. And I think that shadow that is cast over the movie is heightened by the performance that he gives whenever you see him. So you kind of have a feeling for this person. And I hope the microphones picked that up, whatever that was. But Andrew, it is your turn, and I am taking Punch Drunk Love, my favorite PTA movies ever.
So my number three is a film that I believe we all love, and it's Capote.
Yup, that's a shortlister. That's definitely a shortlister for
me. I don't even think I really knew who Truman Capote was before I watched this movie. I mean, it's later on in life I read about him and I even saw movies where he was playing mm-hmm. characters in it. And I'm like, yeah, Philip Seymour hit him perfectly. When the first time that I saw Capote, I couldn't believe that he was playing anyone in a real fashion, right? Because, who sounds like that, really? It's amazing, and it's something that I've seen so much in Philip Seymour Hoffman's acting, in that I don't think I know many actors who are able to play this kind of middle ground, even with the way you portray sexuality, right, than Philip Seymour Hoffman does. And I adore this movie for it. There's this one scene where he realizes that it's coming to an end, and he wells up with tears. And we almost like to laugh at those scenes in movies, because as Damien says, real men don't cry.
No, we do not.
But I'm with him at that point, and I love that movie for things like that.
It will get better, Andrew. Your balls will drop eventually.
Oh, wow.
Alright. This is number...
You need emotions, dude.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
We're three, right? This is three, right? So, yeah. Now, just taking the movies that you dirtbags have taken. Hey, guys. Boogie Nights is pretty good.
Yup.
So Douglas. what more am
I know, right? We've already spoken about it. So, Damien, you and I were able to go to a private screening.
Right.
Of this movie, and it was
my number
superb.
One movie, so thank you for that.
And this is only my number two. Oh my goodness. And but he was such a big presence in this movie. He was kind of the opposite of the mattress man, right? In the sense that, so he was about as big a character in terms of his portrayal and how he did it, but he was at the forefront of this movie almost 100% of the time. Or actually, I would say it was a 50-50 between him and Joaquin.
Right.
But he was always known to be number one. And this movie is a master. right? And it's just this great sort of character study of the type of person that somebody must be to essentially think themselves important enough or knowledgeable enough or just that cool to be the center, the focal point for our religion, you know? Like, how conceited and how
egotistical
can you be for you to think of yourself? I can't remember if he thought of himself as God, right? Yeah. But he definitely thought of himself as like the
prophet,
exactly, the conduit through which the word is spoken. And the funny thing is, as I say this, I'm like, but isn't that the same thing as the Pope? But let's not talk about that, right?
The Pope was ordained by God.
Don't be daffodil.
Yeah.
You apply logic to things.
Yeah.
I did like his stories more, though. Stories were awesome.
They were. And it was just a movie that was, you know, as crazy as it is. And, guess what? It's, you know, PTA all over again, right? As crazy as his story is, as
he's not going to be an inherent vice.
It's not going to mean anything anymore. What are you talking about?
But yeah, this movie is just perfect, and he, as usual, is perfect in it.
So my number two is another film which I don't expect to be on any of your lists, because I don't think either of you like this movie. I know one of you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it might have been the first time that I really took him seriously. Like, it was... Like, I liked him before, like, I saw him as a good, great actor, but I never thought of him as someone who would transcend performances the way that we talk about things. Like, even when you talked about Cate Blanchett in Blue Jasmine.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a movie which, more than any other film, talks about life and death in a way that I wished more movies would discuss them. And it's Synecdoche, New York. I love the idea of this film, which
I really
is about
wanted
a,
to that
which is about a playwright making this gigantic play to represent life and not understanding how to represent it, and slowly but surely having to expand his idea more and more. It's almost like these grandiose films that are heralded, and we always understand that there was a hope to capture something large, but watching it, we see that the scope had to be limited at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I adore this movie, and I think more than that, I adore the end of this movie where he's walking down with
fire
the woman. Yes, there are a lot of weird things that happen along the way, but I think it works in the film as its own little parable.
Yeah, that would have made it a better movie. Dalvin teleport.
The flame.
K.O. The movie's... I wish
honestly,
can I ask you a question, Damon? Mm-hmm. Is this a movie, did this become a Double Life of Veronique for you? Was it a movie that you searched for things?
No.
Or was it something where you saw it that one time and fuck it and moved on?
The problem with when I started watching that movie, when I saw that movie, that was back in the day when...
We were still doing a podcast at that point.
When I was...
Like, that's how long we've been doing this.
I was trying to catch up, essentially.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I thought that I was, you know, I had too many gaps. And so I was just going through movies. And once there is a movie, like the only movies that I've gone back to are movies that I've just found and decided, oh, I'm going to watch this. And decided that there must be something else. But when that movie came out, I was still listening to Film Spotting religiously. And so I was just churning through movies, and so it was just a blip. Film Spotting guys watched it,
so,
and
right,
couldn't come up with anything good to say about that movie either.
I propose to you, because it seems like this to me, that you saw it then and you moved on, you never went back. Like, And this is kind of comes into the 2001 discussion, which was when I watched it back then, and I had a reaction to it, and I never did again. Now, like 5 years later, I've come back to it, and I think something else of it. I'm curious to know if you watch it today, five years after the fact or so, just you already know everything going in, you can just calmly sit down and take it and see what you find this time around.
And there's a lot of movies. Like, this wouldn't be high on the list, but that is where I am now. I've gotten to the point where I go, I don't have to force myself to watch it. I can just watch movies that I want to watch, and I don't have the hang up of re-watching movies anymore. I'll just see something and go, oh, I haven't seen that in a while, and just even if it wasn't one of my favorite movies, that's one of the benefits of having Netflix. Like, you just see movies there and you go, oh yeah, I remember that, and you just watch it, because why not? And if it's not as good, or if it's exactly as you remember, you go, nothing changed. But I no longer feel the pressure to, I have to watch all of these movies. I have to. Because the internet says I have to. Because
you're dumb.
Anyways, really was dumb.
What's your number two?
We can just skip all of the rest, because the dirtbags have taken, especially him.
What was in it? Can you hear your number two?
Are you lost your mind? Doubt is my number two, because...
Yeah, it is incredible.
It is his second favorite performance for me, and it is his second best movie for me.
Yeah. My list is a little bit off, and I agree with you. Doubt really should be, up there. But as I said, I'm a silly person, and, I was going by performances, and there are just some... Because of the way I am, I value certain things about myself. And as much as Doubt is fantastic, I love the silly things in life. So do you have anything more to say about Doubt?
It's incredible. If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't seen Doubt, just stop what you're doing and watch it. Stop. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter what you thought you were going to watch next. Cancel that shit. Just watch Doubt. You'll thank yourself. And Osport.
Do people still say pound? I remember
no,
when that was
don't.
A thing.
I said it just because
when Dig was,
that.
The great monolith that
oh,
it
you
once
remember
was.
Dig?
The only reason I know Dig now is because they give me an RSS reader, which I still don't like.
It's because we're old.
Yeah, that too.
It's just Reddit before Reddit.
I know, right? But even then, Reddit was around. And I remember actively making the decision, because I used to use both of them, saying Dig is better because Reddit looks like shit, and that was just,
and somehow Dig, I was going to say, dug itself into a hole, but Dig just made themselves terrible.
Yeah,
and Reddit is still ugly as shit,
but it's the
it's
biggest
what else,
thing out
what
there
else,
you know. Yeah,
you don't have a choice now. Definitely not going back to 4chan, because black hole of things that no one should ever look at.
I remember I went there a couple of times and I was like, wow.
Holy shit.
Wow.
The internet is the worst.
All right. So, my number one. And I'm kind of glad. I actually didn't have to do what Damien did, which I would, especially for this movie. I didn't have to make any audibles. Did you make any audibles, Andrew?
I'm going to now.
Okay.
I'm going to do it while stating my number one, my proper number one.
Yeah. So, my number one is Philip Seymour Hoffman's performance. Not the movie, though I adore this movie. But his performance in this movie. And though, just to, reiterate, I am a silly man. And I like silly things. And if you amuse me, I will love you for life. Right?
Like Mark Wahlberg.
Exactly. And fuck you. And that's...
Trace.
Oh, that was awesome. But that is why, things like The Mattress Man placed so highly on my list. And as I said, The Mattress Man was probably my second favorite performance of Philip Seymour Hoffman, and this is my absolute favorite performance. And again, it's a bit part. He is in this movie for maybe 4 minutes, right? And
is there a purple
name,
suit?
No, there is no purple suit. His name, I think, is Chad. No, but he is the assistant to, not the dude, but the Big Lebowski. Yeah. And this
he's
is
the one who needs to find the ATM.
Exactly.
There are purple suit in that movie.
Purpose, there may be. I can't remember that.
Guy that wears
oh, no, no, no. That's you're thinking of Jesus. Mm-hmm. That's not Philip Seymour. That is.
No, I know it's not Philip Seymour, yeah. But he.
Yeah, he's in it and he's in a purple suit and nobody fucks with the Jesus. Yeah, exactly. But, no. Even just the way he delivers his lines, and he makes his role into this huge, like, weird ass person. And as I said, this is one of those movies where I could actually pause, like, they give you a screenshot where he is literally in the background. He doesn't even really need to be acting, so to speak, right? But if you look at the way he moves and what he is doing while you're supposed to be focusing on, say, Jeff Bridges, it's amazing how funny this man can be. And, you know, the way he says things, like when he's talking about the Lebowski urban achievers. And, you know, in that sort of introduction to both him and the Big Lebowski, because the dude essentially, you know, has his rug peed on and is trying to get a new rug from the Big Lebowski. And he's coming to meet him and he meets, I think his name is Chad. I'm sorry if I'm messing that up. He meets Chad, and Chad is essentially kind of, you know, a placeholder until the Big Lebowski is ready to bring to talk to him. And, you know, just the conversations.
Brandt,
thank you.
Same difference.
Close. And he just, the direction that the conversation goes in, the sort of infantile and dog-like loyalty that this man has to the Big Lebowski, the sort of non-intelligence that he kind of displays. You know, he doesn't look like he's very smart. He looks very one-note. He is the Big Lebowski's man down to his toenails. And he would never, you know, he it might be that he is that just because he's not that smart and Big Lebowski, you know, pays him to be that. But, like, it's just great. And of course, you know, the Coens have a lot to do with that, I'm sure. You know, they wrote and directed it and you know, they kind of molded the way that character would be. And you can see it in a lot of their other movies when they're trying to do comedy. Like, I think the biggest one that actually a lot of people don't like, but the biggest one where you see that kind of thing is even Intolerable Cruelty with Heinz the Baron Krauss von Espy. And you just see that this is the type of character that they write. And you have to be a certain type of person to be able to play that character. And for Philip Seymour to be able to go from The Master to Twister to...
Twister.
But he's great in Twister. And I love him in Twister. He's just this... Actually, he's almost kind of like Brandt, except he has brains. And he's just, you know, bubbly and effervescent. Yeah. Exactly. But in this movie...
Chase tornadoes.
Exactly. And in this movie, to be able to do... so many things, and not just to do so many things, because you can be a jack of all trades and be okay at everything, and most people are either jack of all trades and okay or great at one thing. This guy was great at whatever the hell he put his mind to, and
almost
that's
like,
you know,
he was the master.
I'm sure we're going to hear that he was technically always wearing a mask and going under the name of Daniel Day-Lewis at times. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
So my number one, my real number one is The Master.
Mm-hmm.
Adore that movie, as we all do. And, yeah. But I almost don't want to do it, but just for the sake of mentioning the movie, because it is a film that I noted Philip Seymour Hoffman of a long time ago, and I think it might have been the one reason that I love this movie as much as I did, because this movie has actually waned in the years gone by for me as I've revisited it from time to time.
Has it gotten worse?
I like it a little bit less.
Okay.
But he is still spot on perfect in that movie, and it is Charlie Wilson's War. I always remember the two scenes that just get me.
Can
which
teach
is
them how to type, but
oh,
I love
the
that
two
guy.
Scenes of Philip Seymour Hoffman's that always gets me is one, the one towards the end where he's explaining the story about the small town in, I think it was Pakistan or something, about a child who fell off the horse and how it was a harm, and this idea of it turning good luck turning to bad luck, which eventually turns to good luck again, and it all being about when you decide the beginning and end of a story to decide whether it's a happy or a sad story.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one, which everyone always points to and I adore, might be our introduction to him, and it's when he tells his boss to go fuck himself and breaks a window. Because as he says, and I quote, people have been trying to kill me forever, and do you think that's because my father was a Greek soda pop maker, or is it because I'm an American fucking spy? Because I love that moment. Maybe it's because in my life I hope I have that moment one day as an employee and get away with it, but I love that moment.
You truly do live in a fantasy world that I'd like to visit one day.
Seems fun. I'll sell tickets one day.
Nope.
You can come.
I'm not getting in free.
All that nice.
And Androland, G-Man Land is open in Germany. Do you like movies?
Yes.
Come to G-Man Land.
What? That's what I'll name my theater. G-Man
Doesn't
Land.
Make sense. G-Men are like spies. Like, why would I go there? Just shut up and come. That'd be a tagline. Look, you like movies, right? Just shut up. Come here. My number one is obviously The Mask. Like, let's not be crazy, guys. This is best performance. There's nothing comes to us. Joaquin Phoenix was a complete lunatic, and every time I think about that movie, the person I think about is Philip Seymour Hoffman. So that tells you all you need to know. And it doesn't hurt that might be my best movie viewing experience at Carib at any point ever, and probably will always be my best. Like, you guys will understand, we sat in that theater alone and just watched the movie, and it was
that
incredible to watch.
The only film I've seen projected in 70mm.
Oh, yeah, let's just shit all over. Oh, yeah. Oh, you guys saw it in Africa. I saw it perfect on like a 5,000 foot screen with headphones. Just go.
Yeah.
It's.
Can I tell you though, this was a really difficult list because there are so many movies, and I went through the IMDb page and I realized I've watched a lot of Philip Seymour Hoffman movies.
Because he started generally around the time that we would have been watching.
Yeah,
these
yeah,
movies.
He started in about 91, 92.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen so many of them, and so many of them are good. I mean, because I want to at least talk about there are a couple
on
my shortlist.
The only one on my shortlist that
uh-huh.
I haven't mentioned so far was The 25th Hour.
Okay, right.
Which I loved.
And that was on my shortlist as well. And two of yours, Capote and Charlie Wilson's War, were on my shortlist. And another two that I really want to talk about just quickly. One is one that I know you don't really like, which is Before the Devil Knows You're Dead,
mm-hmm.
with Ethan Hawke, which was
I
just
to
great.
Revisit that movie.
Right? The whole brother relationship and the just assholishness, the dirtbagginess
of
them.
No.
It's great.
Yeah.
You know? And also, a movie that probably you guys would be like, oh, fuck that. But he was just spot on. And this is showing another side of him that he can do this. Mission Impossible 3. Where he is the villainiest of villains. And he's just like...
Do you know how sad... Like, I love that movie. And
mm-hmm.
I love him in that movie. But how much I've learned about the internet that he is the reason most people don't like that movie. And I'm sad about that.
What? No. He...
I mean...
Okay.
Talk to you guys.
All right.
Man to man. When you have action movies,
mm-hmm.
the antagonist needs to be a proper antagonist.
So not a fat fuck that can't run around
Precisely.
And punch? Is that
so,
what this
so
is?
So how did Die Hard 4 work out for you? Die Hard 5, sorry. A Good Day to Die Hard. Where he was dancing and able to do all sorts of amazing things.
Let's see.
Anyways.
It is why I'm now very, very, very worried.
Mm-hmm.
If it weren't for the fact that Zack Snyder is still at the helm, this Superman, Batman news where Jesse Eisenberg is Lex Luthor.
Well, Lex Luthor has never been a physical person.
Right, and that is what I keep telling myself. But guess who doesn't understand that? The man that will comfort everything. He had a CG movie with birds. With birds. In helmets fighting other birds. He doesn't understand not to do that. I'm afraid that he'll think that that's a good idea.
I didn't mind that movie. The movie was alright.
Watch it again recently.
Alright. Alright.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. It was alright.
First time I saw him. What the fuck is happening?
Yeah, but actually, you know what that I want to add, and I think it kind of falls into the Mattress Man shut up kind of moment, and it's a bit moment. We watched it the other day. It's Heart 8.
I was about to say that was also on my list. Yeah.
Have you seen that one?
Yeah,
we watched it on Netflix the other day. And he's just in that one scene where he's like, "I'm gonna shoot some craps, man. I'm gonna shoot some."
I'm trying to wrap my brain to figure out where he was in Cold Mountain.
Yeah, everybody's been talking about
I never watched that. Seen that movie.
I saw that movie. Yeah. That movie sucks.
So I keep hearing.
And I'm trying.
Or at least Spike Lee wants us to think that it's a bad movie. Have you ever heard Spike Lee talk about this movie?
I try not listen.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
I keep Spike Lee in person far away from me.
Oh my goodness.
He's a madman. I want to watch his Old Boy movie though.
Oh, I hear that's horrible.
Yes, I want to see him. I want to see what he has done.
Yeah,
as I hear it, it is comically bad.
Anything else you want to mention, Damon?
No, you guys took all my movies. I picked 6. I'm like, I'll have one audible, knowing full well that some scumbag was going to go. You know what? His best movie is my number 5, and sure enough, right out the gate, this fool is like, doubt is number 5. well, I guess this list is fucked. So, I don't care anymore. I'm Almost Famous on there somewhere.
Really? That's nice.
I like that movie.
I thought you guys didn't like it.
I didn't like it for, like, the first time I saw it.
I don't mind it, but I still don't quite understand the undying love that people have for that movie. And I think
people
I want to try and watch it again to see if maybe I can get that.
It's right
but
there.
We'll see.
I like the fact that what's her face is in it.
Who, Zooey Deschanel?
No. Girl. What's the name of
the
girl?
I don't know which girl.
The girl.
No. I don't know her real name.
Hudson.
Really,
yeah.
Kate Hudson.
Right. It's like one of the few movies that she's in. And I go, oh yeah. I don't see why people like her. She's like an actress. Because all of the other movies, she just plays, oh, she's supposed to be pretty. And the love interest. And you just go, I've seen her do this too many times and I'm not impressed. So
on that note, I guess we could say goodbye.
Bye, Philip. We won't be at the funeral, so weren't invited again.
As usual, you can hear the podcast over on gmailreviews.com, also through iTunes and Stitcher. Douglas, he's on Twitter over at DJ, I lost his name. Damien, I'll still say he's on Twitter at Damien_White, and I am at gmailreviews. Let us know what you think, or don't. I don't know. Thanks for listening.
To all our listeners, this is what I have to say. God bless you all. But as for you bastards in charge, don't dream it's over. Years will come, years will go, and politicians will do fuck off to make the world a better place. But all over the world, young men and young women will always dream dreams and put those dreams into song. Something important dies tonight. Just a few ugly guys on a crappy ship. The only sadness tonight is that in future years, there'll be so many fantastic songs that it will not be our privilege to play. But believe you me, they will still be written. They will still be sung. And they will be the wonder of the world.